Hello, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman. And once again, it is just Justin and Paul today.
Yeah, it's been a little while since we did one of just us two, actually.
It has. It really has.
Sweet. So we'll do our little, what have we been watching? I've been checking out Tokyo Vice on HBO Max, and it's amazing. It makes me feel like I'm back in Japan. Yeah, it's obviously a different experience than I had because he's dealing with Yakuza and stuff, and I never did that. But
now, is that a cop show, or because I thought he was supposed to be a journalist in Tokyo?
Journalist, yep, he's a okay. journalist, and he meets up with Watanabe Ken, who plays a cop, mm-hmm. and there's some stuff there, and he gets involved in these circles. But yeah, it's like pretty cool. I actually did an internship at a Japanese newspaper for a summer. And had a blast and did not do all of this because mine was economics focused. But
I was going to say Tokyo Economics Vice doesn't have that same ring to it.
Exactly. It wouldn't be as fun. But I had an amazing internship. So yeah, still
that's on HBO Max, right?
Yeah. Yes. I highly recommend it. The downside is I can't do my thing where I'm trying to do something else at the same time because there's a lot of Japanese on it with subtitles, and
okay,
my Japanese isn't good enough anymore to just understand it all.
Sure Yeah. And my thing is also from HBO Max. I don't even know how it came up, but it was like things that we think you would like, and it was The Flight of the Phoenix, which is a movie from 1965 with Jimmy Stewart. It's about this airplane that crashes, I'm guessing it's the Sahara, crashes in the middle of the desert, and they don't know how to get out. And this one guy decides that they can rebuild the plane into a smaller version just to get them out of there. And it's them trying to do it and all the problems they go through being in the desert and all the characters. It's a really well done movie. And I guess I always think about this, especially when I'm watching something. I always imagine, like, what was the production like? And I'm trying to figure out, where did they film it? Because I did not look it up on the like trivia or whatever for the movie, but did they actually go to a desert area? Because it really looks like it. And if they built it on a set, that'd be even more impressive. But I'm fairly certain they probably built it somewhere. But it was just, it's a fun movie. And it's probably, oh gosh, it's like an hour 45, something like that. But yeah, well, I enjoyed it a lot.
Phoenix says it's 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Well, okay, so they did a remake, I want to say, with Dennis Quaid from maybe like, oh gosh, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. I could be wrong with that.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Okay, yeah, but this one, if it was 2:21, it sure didn't seem it.
Yeah, the one on HBO from 1966 says it's 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Oh, wow. It sure, it must have flown by really quickly because I thought it, maybe I have a different HBO Max because I really thought mine was an hour 45, but I could be wrong, and that's okay.
Nice. But yeah, you're describing it. I was like, oh, that sounds like that Dennis Quaid movie.
But yeah, because the Quaid one was a remake, I think, because in the original, the guy who, I don't know if it's like a 50-some-year-old movie, so it's probably not a spoiler by now. Yeah, the guy who determines that they can rebuild the plane, they think he's a plane engineer, and he is, but he's an engineer for model planes.
Yeah.
And it's a great reveal. It was great writing. They only reveal that very close to the end of the second act. So it's a great twist there. And I think in the Dennis Quaid one, I think he does like a flight simulation game type of thing and decides that's how he's going to rebuild the plane is based on all of his computer expertise.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. Because I had thought that it was the model airplane thing, but I don't
know. Oh, it could be. For some reason, I thought they probably tried to update it, but I don't know. I haven't seen the Quaid one.
So we have news on your front, right? What's going on? Something exciting today?
We do. It's a very big day around these parts. My book, Go Ahead and Ask, is finally out. It's been a long time in coming, almost a year developing it, that I'm quite excited about it. And if you can get it on Amazon, right now it's only in paperback. I never even thought about doing it in a Kindle version, but a few people have said, I wish it was in Kindle, but I guess I just like having an actual book. So I just went the actual publishing
That's
route.
Hilarious.
So maybe when it comes, because this is a volume one, because the whole backstory is that, so as I plug every week on the show, I have this blog, Maximum Z, and about 8 years ago, I started doing this series of interviews with script consultants, and it was originally going to be five, but the more research I did and the more consultants I found, that number kept growing until it actually turned out to be 50. And I thought, oh, this would be a great book, just collect all of these interviews into a book. But after the final interview, there were more consultants to interview. And so I started just putting out more interviews. And then I decided, you know what, consultants are good, but I also want to talk to other screenwriters. And what about someone who writes in another medium? So I talked to a guy who is a playwright. I talked to a people who do comics and web comics. And as the number of interviews kept coming out, I thought, well, you know, I still want to take the initial 50, but I'd like to combine them all into one book. And I thought, I'd love to get to 100 interviews and put that out in a book. And so last year, I finally got to the 100th interview. And I thought, okay, it's time to start doing this book. And so first, I tried to do the do-it-yourself route for self-publishing. And that was a total disaster, that I had so many questions. And every time I went to the publishing company, their help was non-existent. They just were very, very not helpful about it. And I just was left with more questions than when I came in. And so there's this writing group that I'm a part of. It's a virtual group. And I was just kind of lamenting my woes and trying to self-publish. And one of the other members said, oh, I've published some of my own stuff a couple of times, like 8 books. I said, oh, then I should really talk to you. And so I was talking to her about it. And she really kind of took over. She just said, okay, send me the content that you have. And so we'll start putting it all together. And she was doing everything. She was taking care of the formatting and the table of contents and the endorsements and the dedication page and all that fun stuff. And so sent her all the material I had. And she got back to me about 2 weeks later, said, okay, I've reformatted it. So I hate to tell you this, but if we publish this as one book, it's going to be about 700 pages long. Because I was putting all of the interviews on 8.5 by 11 Google Docs, and she's shrinking them down to 6 by 9. And so, of course, that reduces the text, but it also extends the length of each article, each interview. And I said, and so she said, how would you feel if we did 2 books? And I said, okay, that's fine. And so she did a little more reformatting, a little more reorganizing. And she came back to me another 2 weeks later and said, okay, here's the latest. We could still do 2 books, but they'd be about 350 pages each. And I said, okay. Then she came back with, how would you feel about 3 books? And I said, I can deal with 3 books. So she went back and did a little more reformatting. So the first book came out before we went to press, so to speak. So it is about 212 pages long. So it's got 42 of the initial 50 interviews. And so we decided that we're going to space it out. So volume 1 came out today, 22nd of April. And right now we are looking at late June, early July for volume 2, and then about mid-September for volume 3. So each book will be about 200 pages long and have about 40 to, again, 42-ish interviews. And everybody I've talked to, a lot of the people who I've interviewed, I've told about this, they're all really excited, especially the ones who are in the book that came out today. And that was really exciting. And responses have been very, very positive so far. A lot of people have already ordered it. And so I guess they're set to get it sometime next week. I've already sent the initial copy to my parents. They're thrilled. My wife and daughter also equally as thrilled. My daughter asked if she could get an autographed copy. I said, I'll have my people talk to you about it. So yeah, it was a learning experience. And the good thing is, unlike you, I don't have to keep doing this over and over again with putting out books, because I've got these 3. And I think once the third one comes out in September, I'm done. I don't know if I'll do any more interviews for the blog, though, because I would hate for anyone who's interviewed to feel left out and have them say, am I going to be in a book too? But I'm not good. I just don't think I'm going to do any more. But it was a great experience. I'm really glad I did it. And this is kind of one of those things I had on my list. Like, I want to accomplish this. Originally, it was last year, but kept getting pushed back. But it's out now. And the other two were still gearing up to get those going. And so it's a strong sense of accomplishment in having done it. And I mean, I couldn't have done it without my editor's help and everything, but I'm just, you know, it's thrilling. It's really, it's elating. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Very weird that you didn't do Kindle.
I don't read books on Kindle. I like having the actual book. I mean, I love going to bookstores and picking them up and holding it in my hand, but, my daughter, she reads a ton of stuff on her Kindle. And a couple, you know, again, like I said, a couple of screenwriting friends, they said, oh, I wish it was on Kindle, but I'll still get it. But you know, So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can always do a release in like a month or two of like the Kindle release now out or something.
Yeah.
Like
that. Yeah. That might be the way to go because
I laugh at you is because I never consider a print book like a real launch because they always fail to do sales so horribly compared to ebook.
Hmm.
Like most of my books have probably sold maybe 1/100th of the volume in print as they have ebook, if even.
Wow.
So, yeah. Okay. So like whenever I put a print book out, it's just like, yeah, it's there for fun, but it won't really matter. But yours is nonfiction. And if I look at my nonfiction, I imagine it's a little higher on that regard. Mm-hmm. And then if I look at my middle grade books, it's actually the opposite. So I have one especially that the print book has sold like gangbusters. It's selling like 70 copies a day lately.
Wow.
The last like 3 months or so. 50 to 70, somewhere in that range. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the ebook doesn't really sell. Maybe it sells like 3 or 4 copies a day.
So yeah, I think that's what it comes back to is that I'm just so used to wanting to have an actual book in my hands. And I think because all of this, because all of the screenwriting books I've ever had, they were actual books. I've been picked them up at, you know, at bookstores or at screenwriting expo type of things. And I just like having them there, I guess, because I mark them up. I'll use a highlighter on certain passages, you know, when I was still learning about how to do the craft part of it. And I think there's just something. I don't know.
The answer is that you're old, Paul.
I'm not going to say I'm not, but I think there's something to be said for just being able to hold a book in your hand and be able to read it. And I don't have to worry about the power going out while I read it the battery on my book going out. As long as I have my reading glasses and a good light and a comfortable chair, I'm all set.
Yeah. Well, what you could do also is you could, I don't know, have some kind of bonus thing that you include in the ebook and it'll be like a special thing, special edition, you know, where you could charge like super cheap too. Cause you can do the ebook for like 99 cents and it won't really matter. It's just like a fun little extra thing.
Oh, maybe, because I was looking at other writers who have put out their screenwriting books, and some of them do have print books, and some of them have Kindle versions, and the Kindle version is like $5 cheaper than the regular book, which I totally understand. You know, one of the things is, because I think I've talked about this before, that my little personal touch to all these interviews is that I do 10 questions about the person being interviewed, how'd you get your start, and you know what's something you watched or read recently that you really liked, you know, are contests worth or not. And so I always wanted to try and put my own spin on the end. That's why the last question is, what's your favorite kind of pie? Because I love to cook and I love to bake. And I figured, you know, who doesn't like pie? Apparently, yeah. Some people don't, which I don't hold it against them, the godless heathens that they are. But but everybody, that question always really seems to hit a positive chord for people, because people have even said, like, this is my favorite question, or you saved the best question for last, or like, I've never been asked that question. This is great. And someone said, so if you're going to have all these people talking about their favorite kind of pie, you're going to have recipes in the book too. Yeah. And I had thought about that, but there are so many different kinds of pie. And I just did not want to go through the labor of trying to track down a recipe for each pie. I mean, apple and pumpkin and pecan, those are easy. But when someone's talking about like, oh, my grandma made this olaliberry pie, or someone said, oh, my favorite kind is Oreo pie. I was like, well, I don't want to have to put myself through having to figure out the recipe for every single one of these pies.
So what are some good takeaways from the book? Like, do you have any, I don't know, interviews that stand out? Like that you're like, if somebody's like, oh, I just want to check out one interview, they should definitely dive in as a starting point.
Or that's a really good question. Well, here I can look at the table of contents, because some of them were just so great. Well, there's one, and some of the people who I interviewed, they've since passed away. So their interviews kind of strike a particular chord. Mm-hmm. Like there's one guy in this one, Wayne McLean. He was based out of Canada. And his answers for the interview were actually kind of generic, that they weren't that. They're informative, but only to a certain extent. There's really not much of his personality in it. But after I posted the interview online, he sent me this email back. Was just like, he was so grateful. He said, this was so nice. I had such a great time. And a couple of the people I've interviewed, I've even offered to read my stuff, some of them for free, which is great. But also some of them said, I'll give you like 50% off my rates, because these are working consultants. And so Wayne gave me a great deal on reading my script, and he read it and he loved it. And nice. So we actually had a couple of really nice phone calls after that about the script. And he would check in every once in a while, hey, how's the rewrite going? And, you know, let's talk about it. And so we probably talked a couple of times for a couple of months after that. And I kind of then, it, as people do, we just kind of lost touch with each other. And then I think maybe about 2 years later after that, I think I'd sent him an email or saw it online, maybe even on Facebook, that he had passed away. And it was just really a shame because it was he was such a nice guy. And you don't really get that as much from the interview, that he was just really, like with a lot of the consultants, they do this because they love doing it. And you could kind of get that talking to him more than from reading what he has to say in the interview. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice kind of getting to know the real Wayne. And so that's probably one that's stuck the most. And then what's also really nice is that a lot of the people who I've interviewed with over these years, I've kept in touch with them, not really as writer to consultant, but just as writer to writer, or, you know, we are peers in this industry, so to speak. And a lot of them, sometimes I will get a lot of people saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for a good script consultant. Can you recommend one? I said, I know like 75 script consultants. I can point you in the direction of at least 10. And I do. And so a lot of people are really grateful. And a lot of people will tell me, they'll come back to me and say, hey, you know, such and such got in touch with me because he said that you told him to come get me. And they did, and they worked together. And that's really nice. It all comes back to my love of networking and trying to help other writers just become better writers and be better part of the writing community.
Nice. So on the theme of go ahead and ask, have you ever in your real life come across any filmmaker or screenwriter who you've like just gone up to and started talking to that left a lasting impression on you?
In a way I have. Wow, this is probably like almost 10 or 11 years ago that at the Comic Art Museum here in San Francisco, that they had a special exhibit. It was some kind of anniversary for Star Wars. And back in the late 70s, Marvel Comics put out their adaptation of Star Wars. And Howard Chaykin was one of the writers. And he was on this panel. It was not very largely attended event, but I just thought it sounded really cool. And some of the artists were going to be there. So I have, because I still have them there. So Marvel Comics, they would put out, and DC did this too. It was kind of, I think they called it a treasury edition. So it was, 8.5 and 11 is your standard comic. So imagine that like twice as big. So they had that. So they republished the comics, but in like this kind of like a paperback magazine type of thing. And I still had those. They were tucked away in a box somewhere, but I managed to dig them up and I brought them to this event, hoping that I could maybe get the creators to sign it. And I did. I'd have to dig them up to see who they were. But Howard Chaykin was one of them. And at the time, I was doing this an online radio show. And I was interviewing writers at the same kind of thing, same time, kind of like we are now. But it was a once a week thing and it was always live, but they recorded it. And so I'd been doing it for probably about 6 months or so. And while I was talking, getting Howard Chaykin's autograph on this book, I said, hey, I do this radio show where I talk to usually screenwriters, but I'd love to be able to talk to you about your writing experience. Would you be interested? And he said, sure. So he gave me his card, which I think was his home number. And so a couple of weeks later, I called and set it up and we did the interview and it was okay. I must have gotten him on a bad day because he was just in a grouchy mood. He was even eating his lunch while we're doing the interview. Nice. And he was, because I was kind of familiar with his work because he'd done a ton of stuff for DC. And so that's what I really knew him from. I didn't really know a lot of his independent stuff, but I think he was just kind of angry or maybe annoyed that I wasn't a slobbering fanboy, just kind of like gushing about how amazing and what a genius he was. I was asking him questions about being a writer. And I think that's not what he really wanted to talk about, but I still had the experience. So that's my brush with writing fame on that front.
Nice. I guess mine all come from the Austin Film Festival, really.
Oh yeah. Weird. I could see that.
You meet so many good ones there. The WGF here, the Writers Guild Foundation, has events too, and they're cool, but like so often the people are just in Austin to be there and hang out and they're not,
right.
They don't have family to go home to. So you'll go talk to them and like Shane Black sitting at a couch with him and he's just super cool dude and just hanging out and having a blast. And
yeah, I actually, because, oh wow, this, I can't even remember what year it was, but I went to a like a writing conference thing in LA, and Shane Black was one of the speakers. And it was not another huge crowd, but he was one of the panelists, and someone was asking about such and such about, you know, being an aspiring screenwriter. And what he said really hit a chord with me. He said that he doesn't like it when someone calls himself an aspiring screenwriter, because that means you're aspiring to be a screenwriter, that you either are or you aren't, that you can write a script and that makes you a screenwriter. Now, it's one thing to write one and it's another thing to sell it, but both of those writers are still screenwriters. An aspiring screenwriter just, I guess, imagines or hopes that they get to be a screenwriter someday. And I was talking about that with some other writers, and they said, yeah, I never really thought about it that way, because a lot of writers will call themselves aspiring screenwriter. And I think if you are working at it and you're actually writing and trying to become better at it, maybe trying to establish a career, you are a screenwriter. You're just not a working screenwriter or a screenwriter who's getting paid for it.
Yeah, you could say I'm an aspiring produced screenwriter.
Exactly, exactly.
If you want to say it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I was, I like that. I think James Hart was another cool one that like really touched me, because he had written some really amazing movies, including one that some people don't like, but I really loved, Hook. But also, I think he was the writer on Dracula, right? Bram Stoker's with Gary Oldman and all that.
Oh, the Coppola one.
Yeah. Some great movies he's been involved in. But so for people who want to find your book, tell us where to find it.
Well, you go to Amazon and you can type in my name, Paul Zeidman, or type in Go Ahead and Ask Screenwriting. And I guarantee right now it's the only one that'll come up, because it's the only one with that title. And it is available, as we were talking, right now only in paperback. But I have a strong suspicion that will probably change soon to add in a Kindle version, since, you know, dumb old me underestimated the desire for people who wanted their book in Kindle form. But I guess they're out there. So we try to appeal to as many readers as possible.
The other secret with that is, if you have a Kindle Fire and you get a Kindle, you can have it read it to you, and it sounds pretty good. If you're not doing an audiobook anytime soon, that's a way for people to be able to read your book while doing dishes or cooking or whatever.
So, oh, I see. Well, but wouldn't you need to hire someone to narrate the book or read it?
No, that's what I'm saying. Kindle Fire. The whole reason I bought it is because it has a special way of reading Kindle books that sounds pretty darn good. It's obviously not as good as a real narrator, but it's way better than what you get on your Android or iPhone or any of these kind of devices, or computer even. It's pretty good. For $100 is a great value. And so I do that with like my textbooks. They don't have audiobook versions, but I want to be able to listen to them, you know, because I don't have time to sit and read 500 pages of a textbook.
I'd be curious to know what this would sound like, because this is really a collection of interviews, and the questions are me and the answers are the person I'm interviewing. So I guess it's just reading it all in the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to, what does the voice sound like while it's reading? Does it sound very computerized? Is it kind of like sound like Siri, just kind of a slightly stilted human voice?
Yeah. Like pretty good. Like Siri, but like, and it'll pause in weird places where you don't expect it to, or something like that. You know, not like a long pause, but where it says it in a weird cadence or whatever. For sure, but it's good enough to where I can be lost in it and listening to a book and enjoying it. So, wow. not like a novel. I don't think it'd be as good as novels. Some people still do that, but you know, because if you can do a novel, they probably have an audiobook for it, so you might as well get that and listen to a really high quality narrator doing their job.
Right.
But if it's for a book like this, where it's not really, it wouldn't really matter that much, you know. And a good narrator might make your voice different from your interviewee, but it's not that big of a deal. That said, if you want to do an audiobook, I did that for my nonfiction book, Creative Writing Career, back in the day. And I just put it on ACX, and I can tell you how to do that. For people who are curious, we could do an episode on that if we decide to do it someday. Walk you through the process or something.
Fun. We'll see. I mean, like I said, I guess I'm so old school. That's why I like actual books.
And you insist your readers do too.
Well, I sure hope so. But yeah, I guess I am open to Kindle, but honestly, again, it really never occurred to me to put it out in ebook form, just because I guess I like actual books so much.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right. Everybody go grab the book. Go ahead.
Yes,
and
please.
Ask. Go ahead and buy the book and enjoy it. And anything else you want to add, Paul?
No, as I said, you know, this is volume one, and we are looking at hopefully volume two, late June, early July, volume three, mid-September. And you know, imagine a 3-book set. What a great gift that would be for any writer in your life come the holidays.
Awesome. There you go. All right, everybody. Thanks again for checking us out, and leave a review, all that jazz. Find me and my books on Amazon. And I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman. You can check out my screenwriting blog, MaximumZ.blog. I'm on Twitter at Maximum_Z. I've also, Instagram played a huge part in the marketing of this book. It's at PEZ, my initials, PEZ Screenwriting. So feel free to follow me. And I've got a book on Amazon too now. I could add that to my outro. one book, Go Ahead and Ask, interviews about screenwriting and Pi Volume 1. Please check it out. Appreciate it. And if you like it, leave a positive review. I would be very, very grateful. Again, he's Justin. I'm Paul. This has been the Creative Writing Life Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy, and most importantly, go write something.